My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the Hoffman Show, our final hour here on this Tuesday on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Coming up at 6:30, is an improbable run to the playoffs really going to happen? We'll talk about it coming up at 6:30, but right now, 6 o'clock, we didn't get to hear anything from Dan Quinn yesterday, so we figured we'd catch you up today on everything DQ said in light of the Commanders' first win of the season with a pick six.
The six biggest Commanders storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick Six at Six.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, there is one issue above all else when it comes to this team from Sunday, and that is where we start our Pick Six.
Number one.
Number one is the red zone. Dan Quinn was asked about it, as you would imagine. And this is what he had to say about his team, their performance in the most important area of the field. He did try to go offense and defense here. Obviously, both are relevant in terms of the result of the game. I think most people are more in tuned or intrigued about what happened on the offense. But here's DQ.
Yeah, on the let's start on the first one, the touchdown. We've really got to be better on the first one that defensively we allowed. The term, you've heard it, crack replace. And so when one trap block happens, you got to be ready to step in and get there. And so not to be able to deliver on that one down the red zone, that was a bummer for sure. We misfit, I would say probably two or three that caused some of their stronger runs. But by and large, I was pleased. I felt, John, that the effort felt more like us. Not to say it was a completely true to our identity yesterday, but it felt a lot more like us and moving in that way. So I was pleased with that. I felt it was more physical. There was better hitting. There was better tackling. To say we were there, hell no. But it was a lot better and trending in the right space.
I think defensively in the red zone, like the Giants had them well scouted. They were like, they struggle. Wow, Anthony. That is... struggle is an interesting word to struggle on. Let me tell you.
Struggle.
They struggled against Tampa with bunches. Giants get down to the red zone. Bang, bang. Bunch. Touchdown, Malik Nabers. Wide open. Bad communication. They struggle with trap and wham plays. The crack replace defensively. So they hit him with a wham. Or a trap down there, and they walk in on another touchdown. Mike Zander still in a ton of space, still figuring out how to play the right leverages. Bang, bang, they get him. That's the three Giants touchdowns all in the red zone. But I think most people are probably more intrigued with what's going on the offensive side of the ball because they did get, you know, force a field goal. Obviously, they get a fourth down stop. Everything's a little weird down there because of the lack of Giants kicker. But on the offensive side, What are we doing on these penalties? That's step one of fixing the offense in the red zone.
Yeah, those are the ones, so I would call like the pre- and post-snap ones, like they'll fall under discipline, Nikki. And those are the ones that we have to get rid of because there could be a check at the line of scrimmage and you jumped, you know, like, hey, man, like we're going to get into the best play, have the discipline to stay in it. Like most things, more practice at it for sure. You know, even if you have to check in and out of a play that you don't need to for that simple purpose of doing it right. More often, I found the false starts are I'm wanting to go too quickly. I'm just get the check, get to the call to go. I can live. You don't want them, but I can live with the combative ones. I can live with a holding or a DPI. I didn't like the one on Nick on the opening kickoff, but when you're trying to be physical, that part I can live with. The pre- and the post-snap ones, that's a no bueno for me. So we'll really, you know, kind of focus in on that. The false starts were the ones that set us back in this game from a penalty point of view.
And to Dan's point, some of those happened on plays where they're changing the play and then guys, like, they forget the snap count or they can't hold their water. Like, there's a communication aspect to it, not just an anxiety to play football aspect to it, if you will. So how much of the tempo that they're trying to play with impacts those types of things?
Prior to that point, what did you think of the pre-snap communication, especially when you guys went no huddle? And because I know a couple of the false starts were when you guys went no huddle. Was that an influencing factor there? And I guess what did you think of the progress in that area?
I felt like coaches and players did a good job communicating. That was one of the things, if you remember from last week, that I spent a lot of time on to say I want that part in-game to be better. You're correct that two of the false starts were, you know, checking a play, going from one to another potentially, and that is part of what we do. So the more discipline, the more that we can practice it, the better we'll get at it. And so doing it in the game-like environments, with noise, without noise, all of those, we'll continue to do that because there's a lot, you know, that we want to work on, but that in specific, the pre-snap, like making sure we get that right, that's really important. And we're going to work our ass off to get that right.
The thing is, like, you want to go fast because you want to cause communication issues. Like, all the stuff that has happened to the Commanders in some of these problems is what you're actually trying to cause in the other team. The reason it should work is because you're the offense. You're dictating. There's no such thing as hurry up defense. There's, oh crap, they're hurrying up defense. And hopefully you're prepared and you know what you're doing, and then it becomes a non-issue, and you've actually just hopefully got good answers to a simplified offense that's going quick, and you can have them go out quickly and get off the field, and then hopefully your offense can put the other team in a blender, and their defense gets real tired, and that's a good way to play complementary football if you can. But on the offensive side, when you go hurry up, you're supposed to be able to avoid all that stuff because you're the one dictating the action. You're the one who knows what to do. And the Commanders have a lot of really good pieces to go hurry up. One, they have a mobile quarterback, so you can get out of bad plays and stay out of bad down and distances because he'll just scramble and keep you moving. Two, they have versatile pieces like running backs who can line up as receivers and tight ends that can run line up as tight ends, wide receivers, or fullbacks. Like, you have versatile pieces that can go all over the place that you don't lose some of the formational flexibility and personnel flexibility that you get typically in hurry up because you can keep the same guys on the field. And the second you sub, your hurry up is dead because the other team can take a sub and thus take a breath. So at the end of the day, like, they got to get it, make sure that they're on the same page, that they understand, hey, if we're in hurry up and we check, this is the default snap count, or this, you know, the snap count stays, or the snap count changes, or whatever it is, where you don't have guys jumping off sides. Because you want to quote the old John Wooden quote, you want to be quick without hurrying. You want to go fast but in control, where it feels out of control for them. And unfortunately for the Commanders, it felt out of control on the offensive side of things, and that killed their chances of being productive in the red zone.
Number two
topic that Dan Quinn tackled is Terry McLaurin. He has been a factor, kinda, but certainly not to the level that we know he's capable of. And there was a really great question that Ben Standig asked relative to Malik Nabers that also, if you read between the lines, can apply to Terry. Here's Standig's question in full and Dan Quinn's response to it.
And as somebody who obviously is steeped in the defensive side, they targeted Malik Nabers 18 times yesterday, and we see some teams, just no matter what, they're throwing it to their guy. What is it that allows some teams to do that, where other teams, fans will always scream, or maybe reporters too, hey, get that guy the ball, is it allowing them to do it when you know it's kind of going in that direction?
Yeah, I think if you're going to be intentional in that spot, then you, most teams, Ben, will move the player around to where, you know, the first or second read could go. I was certainly impressed by Nabers. When you see him in person, you feel his size, you feel his strength, you feel his speed that you can go. And so I think he's going to be an excellent player, or is an excellent player. But I was most impressed just by the size and speed of him. So anybody that can play inside, outside, that takes a lot of work to do. Oftentimes you'll see route combinations where they're going to throw, this is where the read is, man or zone, or where it can go. And then other teams will say, we're going to put that player into that spot. And it takes a certain skill set to be able to do that, and he certainly is one that can.
This is the thing I've always wondered with Terry, is like, when we say he's not Justin Jefferson, he's not Malik Nabers, he's not, you know, these top Devontae Adams, like, what is it about him that teams just don't, multiple coordinators now have just not been comfortable moving him around like that? Because he does line up in the slot sometimes, and he has one from in there, but he's not as quick as guys like Jefferson or Chase, or certainly not as tall and as lengthy and as rangy as some of those guys. He's a different type of receiver, almost like a power player, although he does obviously have terrific top-end speed. And so I think the fact that he is seen as much more of an outside guy prevents Terry from getting those 15, 18 target type games that guys like Jefferson and Nabers and Chase and on down the list are getting on a regular basis. With that said, I do think you need to find ways to get Terry the football. He's too talented to have this little production. They did a better job on Sunday. You know, obviously they got him going early. It was a loss of two, but you get him involved on the first play of the game. Go back to that. Go back to the screens. Get the pop passes. Like, let him get the ball in his hands and run and be physical. And in that way, there is a tone setting. They're very different players. But I think of Deebo Samuel with San Francisco. When Deebo gets involved early, there's a tone set for the game for that offense. And Terry is again, I'm not saying you need to line Terry up in the backfield or hit him in the same way that Kyle dials things up for Deebo, who's, I don't want to say a unique one of one, but one of like five guys in the league that can do what he does. Terry's not that, but there's a same physicality. There's a same intensity. There's a same attitude that is brought to the game when he gets the ball early, and I would love to see them find ways to get him more involved. And then obviously the Giants did a really good job of preventing deep shots. There's 20 or of in the game, there's zero passes of 20 plus air yards. That's not going to happen every week, and the Commanders need to make sure that doesn't happen every week. You need to get Terry 2 to 3 shots a game down the field because he can be lethal in that area. All right, continuing on.
Number three.
With Dan Quinn's best of what you need to know, top headlines of the day, top questions to be answered from the weekend. Jaden Daniels, we just mentioned it, zero downfield throws in this game, zero 20-plus yards. Did have some really nice ones in the 10 to 19 range, including 7 of his 9 attempts in the second half. So they did start to open it up a little bit more. But why, the question to Dan Quinn was, why so many horizontal quick passes early in the game?
I think as you're going through it, Sam, like, we're still learning too. And, you know, Jaden's just going into his second game. We had some ones down the field that we would have liked to have seen him take. Some of the ones even on the scrambles to remain a passer as you're coming closer towards the line of scrimmage to throw it down the field. You're probably referring to some of the RPOs that would have worked in there. One of the things I did like about, you know, the way that we did able to control the possession of the ball, I think there was probably 35 runs and 23 completions. And if you're 55, 56, I think we ended up being like 58, somewhere in that neighborhood, Sam, what then happens is time of possession, you know, now can become a factor, more plays. And so although we missed the mark in the red zone, I was pleased to see us, you know, taking care of the ball and having long extended drives. So we didn't punt. We kicked a hell of a lot, which, trust me, after what this team's been through, like, I'm not bitching about making field goals, okay? But I will say that the completion, the poise of Jaden and putting the ball at the right spot, that's a really big deal. And I think the more we play, like, we are still a new team together. The more reps, the more game experience that we get, these are really valuable, like, times for us. And so the games are so important, not just because of the win-loss, but like how we want to play. So I just kind of anticipate us continuing this trajectory upwards.
One of the most astute things that I thought Logan said in our tape breakdown today when we taped Take Command, which is available now wherever you get your podcasts, is he thinks Cliff is still finding the right amount of drop back versus these RPOs, these screens, etc. And I talked yesterday during the show about how I think Cliff is really managing the drop back game for Jaden well, because he is struggling more in it than he is with the RPOs. And I'm going to call it the RPO family of plays, because some of these are not RPO, set hut, put the ball in the back's belly, see what happens to the linebacker, pull it out, throw behind him, or throw the bubble based off where they go in a live action read, if you will, post-snap. Some of these are get to the line of scrimmage, survey, okay, we have numbers to run the football, set hut, bang, hand the ball off. Some of them are get to the line of scrimmage, or on the flip side of that is get to the line of scrimmage, survey, run numbers are bad, we're going to throw the bubble out here, set hut, fake the handoff, throw the bubble, that's where the numbers are. And so they're predetermined, but if they're predetermined, the defense kind of knows that too, and so the ceiling of those becomes a little bit lower, because if I'm the read player, if I'm the linebacker or the safety that's being the determining factor here, I can go one way and on the snap fly the other, like be anticipating, okay, yep, there it goes, that's that RPO, let me get out there. And so there's a little bit diminishing returns versus doing it post-snap, versus different ways that you attack defenses. But in theory, you should have a good look, or a chance in a good look. You're not running into bad looks. You're not throwing bubbles into bad looks. But then guys need to hit blocks. They're very execution heavy, yada, yada, yada. But they're safe throws, and they are going to prevent turnovers. And in theory, you got a quarterback who executes them really well, because he's done those box counts before. He's executed that stuff at a high level. He makes good decisions there of when to hand it, when to throw the bubble, when to check out of it completely. Like he can handle a lot of that stuff. The problem was when you get into like, okay, it's third and long, now we need you to drop back, read a full field and make a throw. You haven't done it the entire drive. And that's a hard situation on a third down against a complex NFL defense with possibly a blitz coming, to have your first full field reads. And as the game went, and especially after Jaden came back from the one play that he missed, they started to sprinkle in more drop back, and I think they found the right rhythm. So going all the way back to the beginning of Dan's answer there, when he says we're still learning, I think that's one of the things they're learning, is like, how much do we have to get Jaden some quick game and some real throwing the ball down the field stuff early to get him in a rhythm, and then make sure that we're insulating him and protecting him with some of these predetermined throws in the RPO family, if you will. All right, to the defense and the special teams.
Number four.
Players that stood out for Dan Quinn against the Giants. A couple of vets that he wanted to isolate, and one more, by the way, on the offensive side.
I thought, I'll give you two things. One is the first one, I would say, Zach Ertz. I thought he just made some impactful plays in this game. He's thoughtful. He's knows how to get open. He can find the spots in the zones. He made some big plays for us. And then the other spot is on defense. And I thought Wagner and Luvu looked like a pair of linebackers that were square. They tackled. They blitzed. They, you know, they just felt like they were in connection and concert together, Candy. And so those two, I really felt Frankie's physicality. There was a big hit early on one of the plays to Neighbors on the very first drive, that he had a long catch and run, and you just saw Frankie hauling ass and going to get into the tackle. But he brings a lot of energy, not just to this team, but to the entire building. I love that, what he does. And then Bobby, I just felt him square and tackling, and that was, you know, what we need from him, and he absolutely delivered. So those would be the three that I would point out to in the game.
Were all those guys perfect? No, but they did the thing that you'd expect them to do. And I'd add Austin Ekeler in there too. Just like the vets on this team, the guys they signed to fill roles, they are giving you exactly what you'd expect. Not unbelievable play, although Ekeler, I mean, if there's not the penalty on the kickoff and he runs one back for a touchdown to go with the 70, 80 yards of scrimmage that he has, like that's a damn good day for Austin Ekeler. Ertz making the big catches down the field, just consistently knowing how to get open, know how to drop flags and penalties as well. His yardage total in the box score doesn't actually reflect his impact on the game. And then Wagner, better in week two than he was in week one, continuing to learn some of the coverage stuff in this version of this defense, different than the one he played in Seattle. And obviously he's a little more advanced in age, so he's got to figure out how to play within his current capabilities. But all in all, playing really well. And yeah, the physicality that Luvu plays with jumps off the tape. And unfortunately, like, my two favorite defensive plays from the game are that one, where he just, it's a big run, but the physicality to end it ends it violently. And then BSJ, like, it's another big run, but the punch out he has, the relentless pursuit, and the hey, I know this has been bad up to this point, but let's turn this around and go make a play. That's big time stuff and who this team very much wants to be.
Number five.
Obviously, you can't go through the biggest stories of the day from the weekend and tie up all the loose ends without talking about Austin Seibert. He made 7 field goals. Must be a nice feeling for his head coach.
Yeah, I absolutely can. And going into it, I thought first to recognize Adam and Lance and the personnel department to say that they've been digging and finding and looking and just not going to back off in terms of the competing of what it would take to find it. And so Austin was somebody that we had spoke about a while back, even all the way back when we were at New York and New Jersey practicing against them and playing the Jets. So he was somebody that had just been on our radar, knowing that they had a good kicker in Greg Zuerlein. So if he was somebody that was going to be available, then he was somebody that we were going to consider. What does it mean to deliver for the team? A lot, because we've been up and down in this spot of our special teams. I love the energy and the toughness that our special teams bring. So this is kind of the last piece, you know, to stir the drink a little bit to make sure. I love the kickoff side. I was bummed that Austin didn't get the touchdown, but like, we're going to be a factor on special teams, the way we run, the way we hit. And so this was a really important piece to know that he can be counted on in those moments. So yeah, it's a really big deal.
And last but not least, one more loose end to tie up. A lot of questions after the game. Hey, why did Jamin Davis not play? Dan Quinn was asked yesterday, and well, that's
number six.
We actually put up 5 defensive tackles. We knew we were going to have like a pitch count, so to speak, on Johnny Newton. And so we felt with him 12 to 15 reps for his first game, we needed an extra big guy in the rotation for that game. So it was more by design. If Johnny was going to be up, then we were going to add an extra practice squad player up to have 5 defensive tackles as opposed to 5 DNs based on the limited playing time for Johnny. So that was by design.
And then the unspoken part of that is the guy that's last on the depth chart, the 5th defensive end, is Jamin Davis. And I realize that for a lot of us that have been around pre-Dan Quinn, it's like, whoa, that's a first-round pick. What do you mean he's last on the depth chart? But that's the reality of where we are in the final year of his rookie deal as they continue with this experiment. And maybe later in the year, he's past Javonte Jean-Baptiste. But for what Jean-Baptiste brings right now and what Jean-Baptiste brings on special teams, they clearly thought that he was the more valuable player. And so Jamin Davis as the last guy in the defensive end rotation behind, obviously, your 2 starters, behind Dorrance Armstrong and Cleveland Furrow, Dante Fowler, and behind Javonte Jean-Baptiste, he's the odd man out. And I'm curious to see if that, you know, with Newton moving forward, do they want to keep that flexibility? You know, if F.A. Obata ever gets back into the rotation, like what does that do to Jamin? Because he's a guy that can play inside, outside, gives them a little more versatility, but he's on PUP, and we'll see if he ever gets off of it this year. But it's definitely doesn't mean the Jamin Davis experiment is over. It's just the reality that every single week they got to pick guys to be inactive based off what they need in that given week. And Jamison Crowder was a guy who caught a couple balls week one and was their number one punt returner. He was inactive week two because Noah Brown was up. What happens this week? Do they like what they saw enough from Olamide Zaccheaus to keep Crowder down? Seems like Noah Brown's certainly going to be up. And so is Crowder just going to be inactive every week? Like, we'll see. I'd imagine so. But I went into Sunday not knowing if it would be Luke McCaffrey, Zacchaeus, someone else returning punts. Sainra still? Like, who knows? And that's the thing, is we're all still learning what this coaching staff values. They've done a good job of playing a lot of stuff close to the vest. But at the end of the day, when the lineup card goes out and the snap counts are distributed and the games are played, we learn more about them. And they don't care that Jamin Davis was a former first-round pick. They look at where he is right now. That he's the last guy, and it's not personal. And I don't think Jamin takes it personally. If he wants to get more snaps, he's going to have to play better in practice and continue to show growth that he has. And I think he's doing what they asked. So we'll see if Jamin can get back out there. He did make some plays in week one. I'm sure there's some other stuff that wasn't quite as good because it's a new position for him. And that's what happens to players who are learning new positions in the league. And so going to be interesting to watch. Going to be something to track for sure. But that is that loose end tied up from Sunday. That's our pick six, tying up all the loose ends from the weekend, courtesy of Dan Quinn's press conference yesterday. And when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, we shift gears to the hardwood and a team that has no business making the playoffs that might just make the playoffs. We'll fill you in next on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, three-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hoffman Show, Team 980, always live as well on that free Odyssey app. 25 minutes from tip-off of the Mystics and Liberty at ESA. And Anthony, pretend I didn't just say that, and the Mystics weren't top of mind. What if I told you there was a team once upon a time in a magical, mythical land called the District of Columbia that started the season 0-12? And yet, with two games to go, currently controls their own playoff destiny and is currently in the eighth seed for the final playoff spot in the WNBA.
I thought you would have been talking about the Nationals.
Well, if it was the WNBA, and that'd be weird if the Nationals made the playoffs. But I get your point. Of a team that, if I told you there's a team that's going to make the playoffs that are starting 0-12, the Nationals would make a lot more sense. They started 0-12 there's 150 games to go.
Yep.
Plenty of time. In a 40-game season, starting 0-12 should eliminate you. And I will say this. I will just... The WNBA is currently too small. And it's expanding, and that's good. It's too small because the talent is too good. There's players that are WNBA quality that aren't on rosters. There's like the kind of WNBA side of that. But there's also just the reality that if you're going to have a 12-team league, you can't have 8 teams in the playoffs. That's stupid. The bar is too low to make the playoffs. That's my take. Hot take alert. It's really not that hot of a take.
All right, so I'll ask you this question then.
Yeah.
If there's only, I guess, 6 or 4 teams, doesn't that make the playoffs that much shorter?
Well, you could do longer series, for one.
True.
But also, yes, it would, and that's exactly why it isn't shorter. If you can get more markets and more teams and more games, that's more revenue for everyone, and the owners are the ones who make these decisions. And so if you're telling an owner, hey, you're going to get at least one game, if you finish in the top 3/4 of the league, you're going to get at least one game of playoff revenue. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in a league that the finances have not been great until recently. I get why they do it. It helps their own financial viability. It's not greedy. It's good business in that way. It is incredibly stupid from a competitive standpoint. So both two things can be true at once.
I feel you on that one.
With that said, the Mystics are in control of their own playoff destiny, despite the fact that I think if you injected truth serum into the Tebows, they would tell you this is not what they want. There is a very, very good trio of players in the upcoming WNBA draft. The Mystics will have at least one, if not two, lottery picks. They are going to need an absolute miracle from the Chicago Sky, who are 1,000% free-falling without Angel Reese. They are in bad, bad way. The Mystics absolutely dismantled them last week. They face Atlanta tonight. They need to beat Atlanta and then win their final game of the season, which I believe is against Connecticut. And the Mystics would need to lose both games for the optimal outcome for the Mystics in the long term, which is both they and Atlanta miss the playoffs, and they have the third and fourth picks or third and fourth best lottery odds in the 4-team WNBA lottery. Unfortunately, one of them is probably going to make it, and thus you are not guaranteeing yourself one of those top 3 players, including the top one in the upcoming draft, presuming she stays healthy this year, which is Paige Bueckers. But the Mystics are trying, and the reason I think that they are, if you injected Mike, the general manager, and Eric, the coach, with truth serum, like, they have tightened their rotation. They're loosened their rotation. They're playing everybody. So you got the player and the last player on the bench playing minutes. You got starters playing fewer minutes. There's only so far you can go before you get accused of like truly tanking. I think they have tried to stay in the area that I like to call organizational management, not tanking. And yet, credit to their players, without Shakira Austin, with Aliyah Edwards missing yet another game with an ankle injury, with Brittany Sykes being in and out of the lineup, they just freaking win. And so it's like, in that way, it's great because they clearly have a good culture. They clearly have a competitive spirit and a competitive attitude. They've shown a great ability to find players that will compete their faces off and find ways to win. It's just that once Slim went down earlier in the season and Shakira has not been right all year, continuing to come back from the variety of injuries she suffered. Like, once your season's tanked, just complete the tank. And unfortunately for them, they've gotten hot here late and they're on the verge of, instead of being in the lottery and maybe even at the top of it, they're instead currently in good playoff position.
Yeah, I've been trying to wrap my head around it and figure it out as well, just because we know what's at stake. I think this is sort of kind of, I'm not going to equate Paige Bueckers to
Caitlin.
to Caitlin or like, you know, a Victor Wembanyama where you actually do, you know what's coming, you do everything in your power to ensure that you do tank and you have these grand odds to, you know, land such a player. But
she is like Kevin Durant, though, and I realized that Greg. I know Greg Oden went ahead of Kevin Durant, but like, yeah. She ain't Caitlin, but she's damn good. Like yeah. she's probably the second best guard to come out in the last. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other guards that have come out because a lot of the best players that have come out, Asia, Stewie, like you've had bigs that you're like that. Bigs. That player is going to be awesome. But, like, in terms of guards that have come out in the last 10 years, especially guards that are pro-ready from day one, I don't know outside of Caitlin if there's one that's better than Paige.
Exactly, because Kelsey Plum, she struggled. Even if you go all the way back to,
Kelsey,
like,
Jackie, like, Arike, maybe, but, like, it took Arike a while, and yep. She's a very unique kind of player in Skylar terms of scoring Diggins, prowess. Like, yeah, Skylar. Paige is all due respect to Sky, like, Paige is a better player than Skylar Diggins.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, you're going to have to finish, like, you're going to have to win this lottery. And by the way it works is picks 1 through 4 are determined by a weighted lottery drawing of non-playoff teams. Lottery odds are weighted by cumulative record over the last 2 seasons. The first and second picks are awarded by ping pong ball drawings. The remaining lottery picks, 4 and 5, are by cumulative record over the last 2 seasons for picks 3 and 4. Now, the funny, like, wild thing here is that if you go by like the cumulative record over the last 2 years, you think, oh, either the Mystics pick or the Dream pick is the one that's better. Because Chicago certainly seems like they're going to definitely miss the playoffs. And so it comes down to Atlanta. If Atlanta can split their final 2 games and Washington goes 0-2, because they have New York tonight, who's the number one seed, and the Liberty, or sorry, and the Fever, who are red hot, coming in on Thursday. By the way, I think we can officially say we're going to be doing the show from Capital One Arena on Thursday. So if you're going to that game to see Caitlin Clark and the Mystics do battle, come say hi. We'll be in the concourse. But if it's on this rolling like 2-year bit, you would think, Anthony, that either the Mystics or Atlanta's record would be distinctly worse, and like that's the team that you want to be in the lottery because you can get better odds. Nope. Over the last 2 seasons, going into the final 2 games of this regular season, the Mystics and the Dream have the exact same record.
Wow.
The exact same. Thanks to the Dream going 3-7 in their last 10 and the Mystics going 7-3 in their last 10. They are now, over the last 2 years, 32-46 each.
And those are the two worst.
Those are the two Mystics records that we care about.
Okay.
Chicago is 31-47.
Oh, come on.
And then Dallas is 31-48.
Good gracious.
So realistically, if Dallas could win out, Chicago can win out, the Mystics could wind up with... If Chicago wins out, they would beat Atlanta tonight. Mm-hmm. There's still a chance that the Mystics wind up with the second and third best odds in this thing, but realistically, they're probably going to wind up with just one lottery pick and the fourth best odds, which is only about a 10% chance of winning the number one overall pick.
Wow.
Dang!
Man. I will be in attendance tonight for Mystics Liberty. I was actually at the first game of the year where they played the Mystics. I mean, where they played the Liberty. And they had, I want to say, like an 8-point lead going into the fourth, and we end up collapsing and losing by like 2 or 4 or something like that. But I'm expecting another good game.
Yeah, no, I think it should be fun. Like, the Mystics are scrappy. They play really tough. That's the thing. It's like, they're actually a really fun team to watch. The problem is where they are in their team's arc in terms of building. Once you start 0-12, just finish the job.
Yeah.
And instead, they rebounded, and congrats to them. Again, like, salute to Slim and salute to Ariel Atkins and salute to, you know, Carly Samuelson, Emily Anxler, like some of the unsung heroes of this team. Obviously, Aaliyah Edwards has played a huge role in this and in having a very, very solid rookie season. But, dang it! Dang it! All right, so that's tonight, and then Thursday playoffs. No matter what happens tonight, playoffs ultimately will not be finalized until Thursday. We'll be there, Capital One Arena, Thursday night. Tonight's game at ESA. You can hear both those games here on the Team 980. When we get back, we wrap it up with our favorite thing from the show today and real things real people said into real microphones. It's the Hoffman Show. Final few minutes here on the Team 980 before we hand things over to Megan McPeak and Christy Winter-Scott for the Mystics and Liberty, courtesy of Monumental Sports Network. Anthony, what was your favorite part of the show today?
My favorite part was probably Vibe Check. We had some good calls.
Gary.
We did have Gary. A nice spirited debate between you two. But following Gary, we had a couple of guys asking whether or not, or I guess what we should do with Deron Payne and John Allen, whether or not we should keep one, whether or not we would have been better off keeping one and keeping Montez. So it was a nice, you know, back and forth between you and a couple of callers about Payne. And then Mitch Tischler also, you know, talked about, you know, what they're being asked to do and if they're effectively doing those things.
Yeah, I think the short answer to, like, what should you do with John Allen and Deron Payne is, like, have a freaking ounce of patience, which I realize is rich to ask Commanders fans who have been waiting for 30 years to have patience. I actually got this question on Twitter during the show, which I thought was an interesting, like, framing, which is, how long are we supposed to wait before we can hold the GM and coach accountable? Which I thought is, like, it sounds like there's just an angry mob in the town square, and it's like, we want to hang someone. And I'm like, whoa, no one needs to die yet. But I understand where the question is coming from. And I think realistically, like, you need to see progress by year two. If not at the end of year two, if things are going the wrong way, you need to be like, hey, last chance, buddy. You better have some things figured. You better have some reasons why we haven't seen progress. And we need to understand, or be on the same understanding that your leash is going to be kind of short on making sure things click in year three. And then by year three, I think you need to see results. Like, by year three, you need to be able to compete for a division. And that's a realistic expectation, especially if, you know, you get your quarterback in year one. By year three, are you competing because that guy's been developed and you got that right? And then if, you know, are there other circumstances potentially? Say you get the quarterback wrong, but a lot of other stuff is going right. Would I give you potentially a longer leash? Yeah, I might. But you'd see progress in other ways. And so the answer would be by progress year two, results year three. And while it feels like, it's like, yeah, you got your, you know, in the last regime, the only reason the guy got year four is because the owner was under a billion investigations. And so he would have gotten fired after year three, and he got year four because there was no one there to hire a new coach because the owner was in the process of being pushed out of the league. And before that, like, Jay Gruden won some early, and he ultimately got to year five, but by year five, things were clearly going the right way and he got fired. And we all know what happened with the Shanahans before that and all the other coaches before that. And so, you know, while it feels like, oh, we just want to hold someone accountable, like, you fired a million people. Perhaps patience could be the way. And not forever, but they're doing the right things. It's game two, now week three. There's nothing to hold anyone accountable for yet. Barely anything has happened. So I get the question. I understand where it's coming from, but I do think we're a little jumpy because you just want to see some winning. And that part, as a fan, I fully understand.
I mean, that and we're paying these guys so much money, though, so... I think that's...
Talking about for Allen and Payne?
Yeah. I think that adds to it, too. Just because we do have a ton of cap money, and we do have money invested in the Paynes, the Allens, the Terry McLaurin, so we want to see production if we're paying you all this money kind of thing.
For sure. And I think they need to obviously play better, all three of them, but especially the two defensive guys. But, like... your paycheck doesn't necessarily make you immune from having to learn stuff.
Yeah.
And in the new system. And, you know, would Adam Peters have paid these guys this much? Probably with how they were playing a couple years ago. But, like, there's questions about all that stuff, too. So, just, it's week three. Like,
oosah.
Oosah. Oosah. It's September. Like, no one needs to die yet. It's September. October, though. Sharpen your knives.
Yeah.
Just kidding!
Real things.
We're not going to be sunk this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Let's go with this one. Sunday Night Baseball, Mookie Betts was mic'd up and was asked about the time he met Usher.
He goes around and, you know, he serenades the women. And I'm like, this is awesome. And then I told him, I was like, man, listen, Usher, I mess with you the long way, the longest of long ways. But if you come over here and try and serenade my wife, I'm throwing elbows at you, dog.
It's on.
I told him I'm diving on him immediately.
Did he say, don't worry, that's not going to happen?
No, he had the confidence to tell me, hey, I'm going back out on tour, so there's another chance. I'm like, hold on, wait, Usher, no. But you know, it is what it is. He got to do what he got to do.
I don't know what you say. He's Usher.
I don't know what to say either, but that's hilarious.
You just have the trust that your wife loves you.
Yes.
That's all you can do. Just be good and hope that she loves you, not Usher. Mystics basketball is next on the Team 980.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.